the earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father, Son. Thank you for feeding all living things on earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit, that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is your host, Caroline Wise King, and I want to thank you for being here with me today. We've been having some wonderful guests on the show and will continue to do so in the future. In fact, next week, Susan Grimaldi will be with us. She has traveled to Mongolia and videotaped the Mongolian shaman doing their ceremonies and their healings, and she's got a wonderful amount of knowledge about what they do, as well as her own practice here in the States. She is a Choctaw shaman. So I'm looking forward to having her on. And then the following week, we have Serge Kahili King from Hawaii that will be joining us and sharing the seven great truths of the Hunas. So wonderful things coming up. In January, Maladoma Somme, the African shaman, will be on the show and sharing wisdom from the ancestors, and I'm really looking forward to that. So lots of exciting things coming up. Today, I want to just talk to you a little bit more about shamanism, because I consider this sort of a sharing and teaching kind of a program. I know many of you listening may not be shamans or shaman practitioners. This may be new to you and things that you don't really understand. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the things we do. The phone lines are open. You can call on 323-203-0815 to talk directly with me. If you have questions or just want to join the discussion, you're welcome. Okay. Now, first, I just want to share with you that shamanism becomes a way of life. Once you really experience it and feel it, we live and breathe it every moment of every day because we're awake and we're aware of the preciousness of life, the tenderness of love, the beauty of the earth and all its myriad life forms. It's a good way to live. It helps us to walk upon the sacred earth in a good way, honoring all our relations. There is such reverence and gratitude for all creation, and such honor and respect for all life, and such awareness of the oneness of every living being. If you have ever stood in one of nature's great cathedrals, such as a clearing in a giant redwood forest, where you're surrounded by giant trees and rays of sunlight just slanting in through their canopy of leaves, you know the feeling that I'm talking about. The feeling of being on sacred ground, of being part of a holy creation made of such beauty and such love that it takes your breath away. You know, Rumi, the Sufi mystic, has some wonderful quotes, and he was very close to spirit in his own way. He said, "And still, after all this time, the sun has never said to the earth, 'You owe me.' Look what happens with love like that. It lights up the sky." Isn't that awesome? When you think about it, we live in such a time where we put value on everything. Everything has a price, and everything has to have exchange. And when you think about how the earth gives of herself, the plants and the animals give of themselves without any request for anything in return, and the sun shines on the good and the evil equally and blesses the earth every day. You have to stop and think, wow, this is so much bigger than us and our petty schemes and our small agendas and everything. In the 1300s, there was a mystic and a theologian named Meister Eckhart. It was during the time of the Inquisition, and he did have some difficulties there. But he said, if the only prayer you ever say in your entire life is thank you, that is enough. Can you imagine that? That just the act of saying thank you is enough for all creation, for us to be here and to be so blessed. There's an Australian Aborigine proverb that says, we are all visitors to this time, this place. We are just passing through. Our purpose is to observe, to learn, to grow, to love, and then we return home. One of the most inspirational teachers I've had in this lifetime is Sandra Ingerman. If you have not read her book, Medicine for the Earth, please go out and get it today. It's filled with so much wisdom and inspiration that you'll find yourself returning to it again and again for guidance, or just to remind yourself of the important aspects of your life. You know, we are all in a continual state of remembering and forgetting, it seems. So sometimes we need to turn to the words of great teachers to remind us and get us back on track. I love Sandra's guidance on becoming one with nature. Often in our hectic, fast-paced society, we don't have time to go out into nature. And so she says to imagine yourself sitting in a quiet place in nature, being still and silent within yourself. Breathe in the power of the universe. Breathe out the power of the universe. Breathe in the love of the divine. Breathe out the love of the divine. Breathe in the light of the absolute. Breathe out the light of the absolute. Continue this cycle of breathing, and as you inhale power, love, and light of the universe, you exhale, sharing power, light, and love with all living beings. As you breathe, experience yourself expanding into the eternal light of all life. You are not a separate entity. You are one with all that is. Imagine. Out in nature, everything has a meaning and a wisdom to share with us. And there are many ways we can honor all the beings that share this planet with us. Sun Bear taught me about the medicine wheel. You can still buy his book, Dancing with the Wheel, even though he's been gone from the physical plane for over 20 years now. It's a wonderful book full of valuable information and wisdom. He said, if you live life in a harmonious way, always respecting the sacred circle and all other beings in it, every step you take can be a ceremony that celebrates your connection with the Creator. He taught me about the earth keepers of the four directions. And when he made his offerings of tobacco to them in his quiet, reverent voice, it made me very aware of the sacredness of all creation and how important it is that we acknowledge and honor the creation and the Creator. Because of what we do as healing shamans, it is a sacred thing. If you just understand that when we bring back a part of you that has been lost due to some traumatic experience, it truly is a sacred thing to receive your vital life force back, to receive your power back. And to do these things, we create sacred space to work in so that we're safe and protected and joined together in this ritual to bring about a healing of body, mind, and spirit. All around the world, shamans since time immemorial have paid tribute to the four directions. There are some minor differences from tribe to tribe of who the guardian spirit of each direction is and in what direction to begin your prayers. But basically, they all do the same things. For me, I first smudge the area and the people involved with white sage to clear and cleanse it. Then I begin my prayers facing east, because that is the place of illumination and new beginnings. Then I turn clockwise to the south, the west, and the north, and I call in the power of the earth keepers of each direction. Waban, the great golden eagle of the east. Shonadisi, the coyote in the place of the heart. In the south, which is the heart and the healing of the body. Mujikiwi, the great grizzly bear, to the west, in the place of maturity and teaching. And Wabus, the white buffalo, to the north, in the place of ancestral wisdom and the elders. Then I also pay tribute to Father Sky, Mother Earth, the ancestors of the land. And the last and final prayer is to the Great Spirit, the Creator, for blessings of healing for this person, and I speak their name. I think it's very important for people to hear the prayers, to know they're being prayed for, to know that there are these powers coming in that are available to help them. So creating sacred space is very important. It's something that I think anyone should do when they're doing spiritual work, whether you're just practicing meditation or a period of prayer every day. And of course, if you're practicing shamanism, you definitely want to do this. It's good to incorporate this into your life and your spiritual practice. Now, if you're more attuned to the angels, then call in the powers of the four archangels standing at the four directions to bless and protect you while you pray or meditate. Whatever spiritual practice you are involved in, there are benevolent beings of power that you can call upon. It is always good to do so before opening yourself in meditation and prayer. And just remember, at the end of your ceremony or meditation, be sure to tell them that you are now closing sacred space and thank them for coming in and being there for you. In shamanism, we see the circle of life going round and round. It's our lives follow the same pattern as the cycles of nature. We're born just as the earth renews itself in the springtime and the buds begin to appear on the trees. And then we progress through our childhood and into the childbearing years, which is summer, and the fruit begins to appear on the plants and the trees and the bushes and all. They have flowered in spring, and now they're bearing fruit, just like our lives as we're moving into our young years, 20s and 30s. And then, of course, just like the cycles of time, we move into a period of harvest, the autumn period of time, where we're reaping the benefits of all that we've created in our lives and the joy of being with our children and grandchildren and just, you know, harvesting the results of what we've done with our lives. And then, of course, there is winter, which in nature, it seems to appear that everything dies. The leaves, many of them lose their leaves. Things turn brown. Things appear stagnant as if they are not alive. But we know that that's not true, because in spring, suddenly everything begins to come to life and to bud again and to bloom and to bear fruit again. And we in our lives follow that same cycle. Everything here on earth follows that circle of life, and it goes round and round. Our spirits are part of the great spirit, which is eternal. So only the physical body dies, just as the trees appear dead in the winter, but we are reborn again. Now, karma, you've probably heard a lot about karma, and we've talked about it on other shows, because everybody experiences it. There's no escaping karma, and that's good karma or bad karma, which we all have some of both. But karma is tied to our beliefs. And if we believe we deserve good things, then good things will come to us. If we believe that we have fallen short somehow and need punishment, then no doubt we will arrange to be punished in this life. Belief is the strongest power in the universe. Some years ago, I was having a discussion with my teacher in the upper world, and I said that I thought that love was the greatest power in the universe. He was silent, so I asked, "Isn't it?" And he said, "No." I was really surprised, and I said, "What could be greater than love?" He said, "The power of belief." So, I cannot impress upon you enough how important it is to examine your beliefs. Really look at them and see how they are impacting your life and influencing the decisions that you make every day. We've all formed some basic belief systems when we were small children. And then as we grow up, we don't think about them anymore. We may have even forgotten the incident that caused us to form a certain belief. But those beliefs are still very active, still much in place and affecting our lives. We've kind of grown complacent, and we've decided that, well, this is just the way life is. We, you know, accept it as it is. But that may not be true. For instance, if your parents were yelling at you constantly when you were a child, because every time you made a mess, you spilled your glass of milk, you dropped your plate on the floor and broke it, things that you did as a child, and they yelled at you in such a way that you may have formed a belief that says you can't ever do anything right, or that people are mean and don't like you, or maybe that you're just no good. And you may still be having issues at work or at home related to those beliefs. But if you look at that childhood incident now with your grown-up eyes, you can see it was just an accident. You didn't mean to spill the milk. The plate slipped out of your hand. You were just a little child. So you understand that it wasn't your fault. You weren't being bad. You didn't do bad things. You just had accidents. And nobody plans on having an accident. It happens. Maybe your parent had a bad day that day or just wasn't feeling well. And you can see all that now, and it's no big thing. So pay attention to what's going on in your life and how you're responding to the situations in your life. If you see that there's some kind of belief system that's causing you to react in certain ways, try to track it back to where it came from. What in the world caused you to believe that you were no good? What in the world could have caused you to think that you couldn't do anything right? So we want to examine these belief systems, and then we need to do something to eliminate them or neutralize them. Now, in shamanism, we do something called a fire ceremony for releasing old beliefs that no longer serve us. If you know how to journey, you can journey to your power animal and ask what belief is holding you back from accomplishing what you want in your life. Or you can go to a shamanic practitioner and have them do the journey for you. When you know what the belief is, then what you do is you go out and you gather items that represent what this belief is. I had an experience myself in one of the training workshops when we did the fire ceremony, and we journeyed to find out what was blocking us or holding us back. And I was shocked when I did the journey, and I was taken, it was kind of interesting. I was taken out into space, and I never believed that fairies were really real, but this beautiful, I can only call her a fairy, with these giant pink wings, came and took me in her arms, and she flew me down through this giant forest and down to the ground to the base of a tree and sat me down, and the tree had a door in it. So I'm standing there looking at the door, and I'm like, okay, all right, I guess maybe I should knock. And I knocked on the door, nobody answered, and I knocked on the door, nobody answered, and I knocked some more louder. And finally, the door creaked open, and there was this little dwarf standing there. And he said, "It's too late." And he slammed the door. And I'm like, "What? What?" And I looked at the fairy, and I looked around, and she gathered me up in her arms, and she brought me back. And my power animal brought me back, and I returned to present-day reality with this message that it was too late. Well, when I actually began to think about it, I realized that a lot of the things that I had put on a back burner that I was going to do someday, I had given up on, that I had come to believe, well, it's too late. I don't have the education. I don't have time to get the education. I don't have it. It's just too late. And I had literally crossed those things off my list that were the very things that I came in wanting to do, to be an artist, to teach and heal, which, as you see, I'm doing now. But this is what unblocked me. When I realized, I looked back over everything, my relationships, everything. I'm like, oh, it's too late to start a new relationship. Oh, it's too late to think that I'm going to fall in love again. Oh, it's too late to learn to be a real artist. You know, I had blocked myself. I had built this wall around me that was stopping me from doing anything, and I was a very unhappy camper. So here's what we do with the fire ceremony. You go out and you gather things together that represent this belief that you want to release. I went out in the woods and I gathered up dead stuff, you know, an old pine cone, some old dried out leaves, a dead flower, some old things that represented those things that I had just killed, literally, by saying it's too late. And I brought those back, and all of us, we tied our talisman together with some yarn. And that night we built a big bonfire, and we drummed, and each of us in turn danced around the circle carrying our talisman. And we danced around the circle four times, and then we went to the fire, and we asked the fire to take this from us and to release it from us. And we threw it into the fire, and the flames leaped up around it, and we danced and drummed some more. And it's amazing how this works, because when I carried that talisman onto the floor, it felt like it weighed 100 pounds. I felt like I could hardly carry it. And once I released it into the fire, it was as if this huge burden had lifted, and I was free, and I danced with joy, and it was an awesome experience. And this is what you do. You make your talisman, you build a fire, you say the prayers asking for releasing this from you, and you release it into the fire. Now, again, like I said before, it's good to create a sacred space to work in when you do this. And when you finish, you want to do your closing and give thanks, prayers of thanksgiving, and close the sacred space. Okay? Now, getting back to some of the things that we do, I've talked to you before about the three basic things that shamans do: power animal retrieval, soul retrieval, and extractions. Of course, extractions is removing intrusions that may have entered the body and be causing health problems. Power animal retrieval is when you feel that you've lost your power, that nothing is working right in your life, and no matter how hard you try, nothing works. And so we go and find your power animal, bring that back, and blow it into your heart and into your crown. And just sometimes just getting the power animal back opens the doors and smooths the way, and things begin to happen. So it's amazing the power that these beings have. Now, as I've told you before, they're not really animals. They're awesomely evolved beings that come to us in the form of an animal so that we can relate to them. And they usually come in a form that shows us what their gifts are, their strength or their wisdom or their power. And just getting your power animal is an awesome thing. But soul retrieval seems to be the biggest and most powerful thing that we do for people. Now, soul retrieval, of course, is going back for a part that has left you, perhaps from some traumatic experience. And trauma is different for different people. I mean, for some people, an automobile accident is a trauma. And I might find that person still standing there, that soul part, still standing there by the wrecked car at the scene of the accident. But there are other things. We don't realize how people can lose parts of themselves through much simpler things. For instance, I journeyed for a young woman who was having trouble with alcoholism. And when I journeyed and found her part, she was a small child, about 6 or 7 years old, sitting in a back alley of what looked like a large city, with her head down on her knees, crying her heart out. And of course, my first thought was, oh dear, she's been molested or abused somehow. And so I squatted down by her and I said, called her name, and I said, "Are you all right? What's happened?" And she looked up at me with these big, cheerful eyes, and she said, "Nobody loves me." And then she just burst out crying again. And I'm like, "Oh, honey, why would you think that? What has happened that would make you think that nobody loves you?" And she said that, well, her daddy was gone all the time, traveling with work, and her mommy just yelled at her all the time. Everything she did, she just constantly yelled at her and was mean to her. And she said, "So she doesn't love me, so nobody loves me." And so I had to gather that little girl up and take her to the healing circle, and we did some healing work with her to release that belief system and to release the trauma of feeling so unloved, and to understand that it wasn't her, it was her mother having a problem of some kind that was causing this, and that she was all right now and she was doing fine with her life and she needed to come home. She needed to be home. And so I brought her back, had an amazing result. This lady was able to release her need for alcohol and to get married, to have a child of her own, and to go on with her life. But what I'm getting at is just her mother yelling at her had such an impact on her. Now, I know, because I have children, and I've certainly yelled at them a few times, but not apparently to the point that this little child was being yelled at. But Sandra Ingerman makes a point about this. She says that words, the words that we speak, are seeds. And that the words that we speak, we're planting those seeds wherever we go. So we have to pay attention to the words we speak and how we speak them, and especially to little children who don't understand, who are just trying to learn to be good and to grow up in a good way and everything. We need to pay attention to how we are speaking and what words we're speaking so that our words are healing words and not hurting words. So getting on with talking about soul retrieval. At this point in time, the 21st century, and as we're nearing the end of a 26,000-year age, the last few years I've found that I'm doing more and more soul retrieval of past lives. And I believe that's because nearing this end of the age, we need to be cleaning up all our loose ends. We need to be retrieving those soul parts that are still back there somewhere. We need to be getting our act together. And so it's been really interesting to see people's lives in many different aspects, in many different times and different cultures around the world. One of the most interesting soul retrievals I've done was for a person who came to me and told me that they were sure they had lived in the time of Jesus, and that they had been one of the disciples. Now, I have their permission to discuss this on the radio today, okay? However, they do wish to remain anonymous. Now, this person had experienced a number of events in their life that had led them to believe that they had been Simon Peter in that lifetime with Jesus. They had gone to a hypnotist who did past life regressions, and they had tapes of their sessions, which seemed to confirm this. And the events of that lifetime back then, 2,000 years ago, continued to haunt them. And so someone suggested to them that perhaps they needed a soul retrieval from that time. Of course, I advised them that I could journey and ask about it, but my journeys are spirit directed. And the spirits, my para animals, my teacher in the upper world, they determine what soul parts need to come back. So I couldn't guarantee that I would bring back a part from that time. With this agreement set between us, I did the journey, asked my power animal about it, and I was taken back to a horrible prison in Rome where Simon Peter was awaiting death. He was very old. He was half starved because apparently they gave them very little to eat in that prison. He was scraggly with long hair and beard, and he'd been in the prison for a long time. During that time, he had become very depressed, feeling like his life and all the suffering had been useless, that all his efforts had come to naught, and this dirty, dark, stench-filled prison was hell to him. He missed being on the lake fishing and the breeze in his face and the sun on his back and the water lapping at the sides of the boat. He felt like he'd been abandoned in this prison, and that it was just useless, that all that he had done, and much of what he had done had cost him dearly, because in the later years he had spent a good time on the road traveling and teaching and converting. And during that time that he was gone, his wife had passed away, and he felt guilty for not having been there with her. He was in such a state of despair that a part of him had jumped out, this part that just could not bear another minute of all of this depression. So we gathered him up and took him to the healing circle in my safe place, where my teacher there healed him and removed the trauma of the emotion. And I brought him back and blew him into this person and explained the circumstances that caused the soul loss. They were very relieved to get this part back and went on to be able to access memories from that time and to write about a book about that life. The actual book is now on the market. The name of it is Simon Peter's True Testament. And it can be purchased on Amazon.com or through any bookstore. It is a print-on-demand book, so you do have to order it. But it is available as a downloadable ebook, or paperback, or hard copy. The thing is, the story is absolutely amazing. It's very different from the story the New Testament tells. For instance, it turns out that Jesus was not a Jew. He was of the Mandaean race, and his name was Ishu. He was born into the priestly caste and trained to be a priest from the age of 3. Although it was forbidden by his religion to share his teachings with outsiders, his great loving heart went out to the Jews, and his ministry was to bring them back to the light of the great Father of life, the original Creator, who is, as it turns out, not the tribal God of Abraham. The book gives all of his teachings, which are very inspiring and liberating, and sheds some light on the real behind-the-scenes truth of what happened back then. Things like the miracles, the healings, the events surrounding the crucifixion, and what happened to his beautiful teachings in the years after his death. Haven't you ever wondered about the huge difference between the loving, forgiving Father that Jesus taught about and the jealous, punishing God of Abraham? And haven't you ever wondered why it was the Roman soldiers who arrested Jesus and the Roman court that condemned him to be crucified when the Jews were under the jurisdiction of the Jewish Sanhedrin, the highest court of ancient Jerusalem? And what about this? Why would a Jewish Savior's church be started in Rome, Italy, which is 1,426 miles away from Jerusalem? Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Anyway, as is happening in other areas of life on Earth at this time, the truth is coming out. We're seeing this happen in every area, in the churches, in the government, in sports. All sorts of unsuspected truths are coming out about people involved in those places. And so here we have some truth coming out about Jesus that is just amazing. But the book is warm and loving and life-affirming. It's just that the truth, some of the truths may be very shocking to you. I want to share some of Ishu's teachings with you because I was amazed at how much they are like some of the teachings of ancient shamanism. There are 12 keys to the kingdom, which are basically cover all of his teachings. And the 12 keys to the kingdom go like this. I'm looking at the book, okay? Number one, God, our Creator, is an eternal creative force who created life on earth. Now it says life is defined as that which has been born and is breathing the breath of God. The soul or spirit is drawn into the body when the baby takes its first breath. With the breath of God, we are alive. Ishu taught us that our Father is a great spirit that moves in all things and not a man sitting on a throne issuing commandments and demanding to be worshipped. Number two, life, all life, is sacred because it is part of our Father. All life means humans, animals, plants and trees, birds, insects, reptiles, everything that breathes the breath of God. We are to treat each other and each life form with respect and honor and kindness. Doesn't that sound just like shamanism? Amazing. Number three, we do not kill because all life is sacred, a sacred part of our Father. It would dishonor our Father to kill what he has created and breathed life into. If we must kill to eat and survive, then we are to do it with kindness, creating as little pain and fear as possible, and blessing and praying for the spirit of the animal to continue its life journey in peace, and giving thanks for its giving of itself so that we might eat and live. And as I've told you before in shamanism, we do bless our food that way. Whenever we are having our meals, we always thank and bless the plants and the animals that gave of themselves so that we might eat and live. It's amazing. Okay, now number four. As children of our Father, we are empowered to create new life on earth. It would dishonor our Father if we do not mate and bring forth children. In apparently in issues among his people's beliefs, they believed that it was a sin to not bear children, to not have a child, because we are part of the Father, and the Father is a creative force who created us and gave us the power to create. So that's very interesting. Okay, number five, baptism. Baptism, full immersion in living water, cleanses us of negative energy, and with prayers to clothe us in light and seal us against the darkness, it protects our souls. It says living water means flowing water from springs, rivers, and spring-fed lakes. Apparently, baptism was the most honored ritual they did, and they did it. They had baptisms throughout their lifetimes. It wasn't a one-time thing like, for instance, the Baptist Church baptizes you after you've been saved, and they say that you're burying your old self and raising your new self as they, you know, lower you into the water and lift you up out of the water. But apparently Ishu said that baptism was to cleanse you of negative energy and to bless and protect you and seal you in the light so that you were protected against spirits of darkness who might coerce you or interfere with your life. So it's a completely different idea of baptism. Number six says life is eternal. We are eternal beings living temporarily in a body temple, one of the many mansions in our Father's house of life. In the book, it talks about how Jesus always referred to earth as the house of life and our bodies as one of the many mansions in our Father's house of life. And of course, he referred to the Father in two different ways. He referred to the Father as the life. And so whatever he said when he made a talk to a crowd or he said a prayer, he always ended it with the life is victorious, meaning that the Father is always the one in power and in control and victorious in all things. Number seven says there is no death. When the body temple we inhabit wears out or is injured beyond repair, our spirit simply leaves the temple. Well, that's good news. Okay. Number eight, it says portals to and from the spirit world and how we come in at birth and depart at death. It says the portal stays open for 3 days at each event, and the soul of the newborn and the newly departed must be protected during this crucial time. Birth and death are just doorways through which we enter and depart. The concept of death as the end of life is a lie. Our spirit continues its life journey eternally. Number nine, the scales of Abathur are where our good deeds are weighed against our bad deeds. It says when we leave our body temple, we proceed through the spirit world to the scales of Abathur. Along our route, there are way stations where light beings give us nourishment and comfort to sustain us on our journey. It takes 40 to 45 days for our soul to reach the scales where we are weighed. If our bad deeds outweigh our good deeds, we are sent to sojourn on other planets to learn specific lessons between lifetimes. Then we return to Earth for another lifetime to prove that we have learned the lessons that will gradually unveil our true destiny. Number 10, we punish or reward ourselves by our own choices of action while here on earth. We are subject to a set of checks and balances that some people call karma. If we create bad energy that hurts others, we will suffer the same fate at some point in time, whether in this lifetime or another. If we create good energy that helps others, we will also be rewarded with others helping us at some point in time, whether in this lifetime or another. Our punishment or reward is in direct relationship with the choices we make and the actions we take. There is no escaping the consequences of our actions, whether they be good or bad. Number 11, ascension. And we hear a lot of people today talking about ascension and trying to raise their vibrations and thinking that that perhaps is what's going to happen on December 21st. Very interesting ideas. But what Ishu taught 2,000 years ago, he said, ascension, we will all eventually ascend to live in the worlds of light. Our destiny is in our blueprint, just as the mighty oak tree is in the blueprint of the acorn. When we have purified our spirits so that our good deeds outweigh our bad deeds, we will be allowed to board the ship of light that takes us over the river that surrounds the worlds of light, and we will be home. So we really should pay attention to what we're doing in this lifetime. I never realized until I read this book that we have a blueprint in us. And apparently this blueprint says that we are a great light being in the making, just like the acorn, that tiny little acorn laying on the ground, has within it the blueprint of a mighty oak tree. And given the right circumstances, it will sprout and grow into this mighty tree that can provide shelter and sustenance for many different forms of life. Well, it seems that we have a blueprint within us that says that we are light beings and that we can grow into that just as the acorn grows into the oak tree, that we have to grow into that. So if we pay attention to how we're living our lives and think, is this helping me grow into my destiny, which is to be a light being and to ascend? This is important stuff. We have to pay attention. Okay, and the 12th says joy is a spiritual thermometer that tells us when our hearts are open and filled with the love of our Father. From the cradle to the grave and on beyond to the scales of Abathur, and throughout our sojourns on teaching planets and other lifetimes, we are always connected to the love of the Father. It is only when we close our hearts and harden our hearts that we feel alone and separated. When we open our hearts, our Father is always there with an ocean of love, joy, forgiveness, and healing to fill us up again. So it's all about getting our hearts open, keeping our hearts open, and allowing the love and the light to flow in and activate this light being that we are inside. I would suggest that you get this book as soon as possible. Like I said, it is available on Amazon.com. It has some amazing teachings in it. I only touched on the tip of the iceberg here with the 12 keys to the kingdom. But there are stories, because that's how he taught. He told stories. And there are stories about your body temple and about the gates to the temple and what you're allowing in and out of the temple. And there's some just amazing and beautiful teachings in this book. So when you get a chance, and if you really want to know the truth, Simon Peter's True Testament is available on Amazon.com or through any bookseller. And you can download it as an ebook or buy a hard copy or a paperback. Okay, we are about done for today. As I said, next week Susan Grimaldi will be with us, and she's going to have some exciting things about the Mongolian shamans to share with us. So till then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.